fellow Kalyana Mitras, thank you for coming and joining us here, and more in particular to Brother Teo for his kindness to come down and share with us his Dharma knowledge. And to all those from Subang, we welcome you here. Glad that you are able to join for this session. And tonight's topic, as you can see, it's the importance, understanding the importance of vows, making vows and its effect in our cultivation. So when we talk about vows, then of course in Buddhism, it relates back to the law of karma. And that is why that when, as we understand, people make certain aspirations of vows, then eventually if this is very strong in your mind, you'll begin slowly, if we have that psychic ability, then we see there is a certain tendency in that particular person. So for us in Buddhism, as we learn, it is to attain Nibbana, which means the highest unsurpassed bliss. And for that reason, we get out of samsara through three ways: by becoming an Arahant, Pacaka Buddha, or fully enlightened Sammasambuddha. And all this is dependent on each individual's intention, development of mind. Alright? So in this case tonight, although the word used, wow, it is very strong, usually as we understand, or my understanding is that this is usually used by the so-called Mahayana, because they tend to mean to walk the Bodhisattva path to become a Sammasambuddha. So whether we use this word vow or we use aspirations, when we aspire repeatedly over and over again, then, you know, it also in a way becomes a vow, because the mental tendency is there. That is what is needed. All right, so, but I believe that I'll let Brother Teo to give the details on it. All right. And as usual, let us take refuge and observe the precept. All right. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Kame sumichachara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Suramiraya bhama viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
very good thing to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Yeah? So once again, yeah, we meet. Yeah? So today is the 9th, yeah? December 2016, the last series of talk for this year. Yeah? And the topic is quite unique. Yeah? In fact, it's very important. Yeah? I was so surprised when I received from Brother Gan the suggested topic. I straight away replied, okay, good. You know why or not? Because I was actually sharing on the Tuesday class, yeah, that night after I received the WhatsApp from Brother Gan. The chapter 16 of the Diamond Sutta talk about this vow. And because Sakyamuni Buddha, yeah, as you all know, he is a fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha. So he has perfected the 10 perfections. And to fulfill this 10 perfection, they have to take certain vows to walk the Bodhisattva way. There are 4 basic vows, yeah, to walk this way. I will elaborate on this later on. But the beautiful thing about vow is, if you understand, you know how to use it and apply it, it is very powerful, very, very beautiful. So at that night, the sharing was so different, so profound, because that chapter 16, Sakyamuni Buddha, under the sutta mentioned, he said before he met this Dipankara Buddha. You heard of Dipankara Buddha? Yeah? The Buddha that predicted Sakyamuni Buddha, the Bodhisattva at that time, to become the Sammasambuddha in the distant future in the Sakya land under the name of Sakyamuni. So according to that sutta, the Mahayana Sutta, the Diamond Sutta, chapter 16, it said before even he met Dipankara Buddha, he has already cultivated a very, very long period. And according to the sutta, he has not only met 84 billion Sammasambuddha, he has even made offerings to them and attend to them. So especially those of the Theravada tradition, you will never believe, and you say it's fairy tale. How to meet 84 billion Sammasambuddha? Crazy. But when you understand the cultivation and the power of affinity and vow, you will understand why all these are possible. Yeah. It's just like over the billions and billions and eons of birth and death. The Buddha also mentioned we have shed more tears over all this birth and death than the 4 oceans in this planet. So you can have a maybe slight imagination. Huh? How much tears have you shed? The 4 great oceans. Actually, to have a cup of tears, you know, you must cry how long. Yeah. But 4 oceans. Which means you have actually go through affliction, suffering, misery. Then there is countless numbers of lives that you have been around the 31 plane of existence. Especially the 4 woeful states. Then maybe you have met don't know how many billions of hell beings and take the form of birth and death as insects, animals, peta and demons. Of course, sometimes when your karma is better, you rise and become a human being. Then you take birth when you cultivate and develop some form of virtue or precept, you get to take rebirth as devas. Then when you meditate and develop those mind state, especially jhanic mind state, then you get to take rebirth as the Brahmas, the 16 rhymes of Brahma world. Then you meditate, go deeper into the mind, and penetrate to the formless mind, arupa, citta. Then you can take rebirth in the four formless rhyme, where you live very long, very, very long. So coming back to this particular topic, what I want you to understand is the 10 perfections that Sammasambuddha need to perfect their perfection in order to fully develop the enlightenment, accumulating into the fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha. There are 10. And one of them is called Adittana. You heard of this word? Adittana. Yeah? The one on the whiteboard that I wrote. This word Adittana is one of the 10 perfections that you must cultivate and perfect if you want to be a Sammasambuddha. That's why it's a very powerful virtue. And this one is a cultivation. So the various texts and the books, or you check through the internet, they will always put this as determination. You heard of it, this word? Determination? Yeah? Or resolution? Resolution? Affirmation? Then, like Brother Tay mentioned, aspiration. But what a lot of Theravada people don't understand is, they didn't know that the most powerful of Adittana is vow. This is the perfection. One of the 10 parameters, the 10 perfection to be a Sammasambuddha. So today's topic, the title, as you can see on the whiteboard, is understanding the importance of vow or vows, and its effect in cultivation. How can vows or all this determination? Oh, sorry. Why are you going to write determine? Determination. How can all this? Determination, resolution, affirmation, aspiration, and vows help you in your cultivation. If you go through the teaching, what do you find? Is there any part in the teaching that you find this thing? Apart from the 10 perfection where this is mentioned. Those who are good at chanting, you should know that. Yeah? You always chant in there. You have a lot of affirmation and aspiration in the sutta. Can you name some? You all haven't heard of all this? Huh? Relative, not the head, heard of. What about the rest? Oh, Brother Wong also. Oh, no. Brother Gan? You heard of? Oh, which means you all understand. So, tell me, where this thing are mentioned? The most common one is what? Ah, Ibina, Punyang, Kamina. Ma me bala samagamo, satang samagamo ho tu, yawa nivana patia. What is the meaning? This one, closing puja, we always chant it. Itmina punyang. What is punyang? Merits. By the power of these merits or wholesomeness that you all have cultivated or developed, may it arise the causes and condition for your nature to always avoid the heedless and the foolish, so that you can meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized soon as possible. So that is the aspiration that the Buddha teach you how to make. And that is in your closing puja. Understand? And this is part of adhittana. You make the affirmation. You make the aspiration. But if you do it with understanding, with faith, then you determine strongly what happened. It becomes vow. Understand? You vow to develop this understanding so that you can invoke the power of merits and wholesomeness for causes and conditions to arise, so that every life you come, it can allow your form and mind, which is this nature of yours, to always avoid the foolish and the heedless, so that you can meet out with the wise and the enlightened one in order for you to realize enlightenment or Nibbana soon as possible. So, is this useful for cultivation? Useful or not? Very useful, yeah. Very, very important, yeah. But how many of you really understand this and make it a point that this vow or this affirmation or determination or aspiration that you make with sincerity, understanding, and firm resolution, so that it becomes a part of you, so that it will really manifest? Or are you just chanting it, like the parrot, parroting it, without clear understanding, deep understanding of faith? That's why it doesn't materialize. It's just like I used to tell you all. A lot of Buddhists, they vow or they make aspiration to be born during the time of the next Buddha. Who is the next Buddha? Maitreya Buddha, huh? Everybody know, huh? The laughing one. Then you thought tummy, big one. But when the real one come, no tummy, no laughing. Then you cannot recognize. You vow, you aspire, but you cannot recognize. Doesn't work. Understand that? The reason why we invoke the power of punyang, merits and virtue or wholesomeness, is because these are like spiritual wealth that you have. Understand that? Money that you have. Then you can channel it to good use. But it has to be channeled in a direction where it's allowable. Understand? Like money in our civilization, in our this world system. If you work hard, sincerely, for a living, then you have this money. Then you can use money for goodness, for your own well-being and your loved ones' well-being. Means you can channel this money to buy what you want. You can use it to buy your food, your home, your shelter, your amenities that you need, like your TV, your car, and all those things. But you cannot use money and say, I want to buy that person's wife. Understand? It's not for sale. Understand? So these are the things that is not allowable. So merit is the same. Spiritual wealth is the same. You cannot say, by the power of this punya, may I realize enlightenment straight away. Can I not? There is no such thing. The condition is not there. But why did the Buddha say, may it arise the causes and condition for all this to happen? Causes and condition means what? I don't interfere, that's all. I allow nature, through nature's law, to arrange for the causes and conditions. Then I tell you, because of your aspiration, because of your wow, it can be very amazing. But the trouble is, when the condition arises for you to avoid the foolish and the heedless, you don't understand. Because you never study the essential Dhamma. What is the essential Dhamma? What constitutes punya, merits, you must understand. Wholesomeness, goodness. These are your virtue. Then, let's say you understand that, because as a Buddhist, normally you understand. You do charity, donation, offering. You pay respect, you keep your precept, the 10 meritorious actions you do. You come and listen to Dhamma, you straighten your view. Then, you share merit, transfer merit, you rejoice. Then you help out in temple activity, provide service and all those things. Then you make offering to the Triple Gem. Then you keep your precepts, is another meritorious action. Then you make offering to the monks, to those who are in need. Then you meditate. Then you perform reverential salutation. All these are meritorious actions. All these can give you the punya that you need. That's why every Dhamma session, you actually receive a lot of all this. But it depends on your understanding and your faith and your cultivation. How much that merits. Those who attend the Diamond Sutta class, they will know. You can cultivate to the level of no mark. The four mark that living being cling on to. When you can cultivate until the understanding where there is no mark of a self cultivating, a being inside there cultivating, then there is no mark of others. Then there is no mark of a human being. Then there is no mark of what they call even Dhamma. Then your field of merits become very different, immeasurable. So that first part, let's say, you have some form of understanding, you are able to develop it. Then you aspire for causes and conditions for you to avoid the foolish and the heedless. But you never want to find out what constitutes foolishness and heedlessness. Who are the foolish and the heedless? And now, we go into it. Anybody want to try? Explain to me. How do you differentiate living beings who are heedless and foolish? Then how do you recognize those that are wise and enlightened? Because you aspire, isn't it, to avoid all this. And meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that you can realize Nibbana as soon as possible. Come on, give it a try. Otherwise, how can you fulfill this aspiration of yours? True or not? You can't even recognize who are the heedless, who are the foolish. Then how are you going to allow this vow or aspiration to take effect? Let's say the condition arises. Then all these foolish and heedless people around. But the aspiration, how can it take effect? It can only take effect when you understand that these are the foolish, these are the heedless, and you have already made that aspiration. That's why you will have it in your nature. And you will know how to avoid them. That's why this life, this nature, know. But how do you recognize them? Maybe we start with heedlessness first. Who are the ones that are heedless? Huh? Of course, another word only. It doesn't explain anything. Healers are deluded people, ignorant people. But how do you identify them? Healers means what? Means they don't care about life, understand? They dare to do all those things. That can... Yes, that is one of the ways to look at it. They don't care, but they don't believe in the law of karma. They dare to kill, they dare to harm, they dare to cheat. They dare to drink and get themselves drunk, intoxicate themselves. They dare to sell drug, weapon. They dare to kill for money. They dare to actually do all the vices and all those things. Then they stay up late night. They become so heedless, they get themselves involved with all the nightlives and all those things. Like those who go and drink, womanize, gamble, having late night. Then now maybe horse betting and all those things. So if you associate with all this, means you are associating with the heedless. And the heedless are as if dead, because these are foolish people who don't have the understanding of the teaching, the Dhamma. So they will not have the ability to avoid evil, because they don't even understand what constitutes evil. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion is always there, because that selfishness born of Sakkayaditi, self-delusion, is so strong. They only hold on to their egoic mind. They only believe me, I exist. Therefore, this personality forced them to become selfish, greedy, possessive, violent. And because they think they exist, they got this desire, this lust, this craving, this attachment, this clinging. Then at the same time, when they have problem, they have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. So these are the signs where you can see they are not interested in spiritual teaching. They are not keeping their precept, like what Leslie said, because they do not fear all this. Because they don't believe all this. They only believe in short-term advantage, benefits. That's why they dare to lie, cheat, deceive, and do all those funny things. And they are very cunning. And they are very selfish, possessive, authoritative. And sometimes they can be very, very violent. So make it a point to cultivate with understanding what are the people that we develop through our cultivation, the understanding that they are heedless. Heedless means they are never mindful, they are never aware. They don't have the Dhamma understanding. They don't even know what precept is. So they don't have a firm direction in life. They dare to do things that can lead to karmic negativity and downfall. That's why they are called the heedless. And the Buddha, under Dhammapada verse 21, make it very clear. The heedless are as if dead. There is no hope. So this is the first way to recognize the heedless and the foolish. Now I ask you the second question after you understand this. Will you be more mindful from today onward who you mix with? Understand? That's why you will have to develop that understanding so that this vow and aspiration can take effect. Then the second part is more difficult. How do you know that person is wise? How do you know that that person is already enlightened? Then only you can make an effort to associate with them, meet up with them. Sometimes you meet up, you cannot recognize because you don't develop this ability to recognize. Like Maitreya Buddha, you always think big tummy, laugh a lot. Then the worst is nowadays a lot of so-called Buddhists or cultivators, they themselves don't really know how the enlightened one look like. But they can quote to you and tell you through the text how the enlightened one should behave. Understand? Yeah. Like sometimes in the text they tell you, if 7 days you after you become arahant, you don't renounce, you die. You believe like that. If arahantship is so fragile, you want to become arahant or not? 7 days, don't renounce, you die already. A lot of things I realize, you don't really, really contemplate into it. You just take from the text. You look for authority. So coming back to the question, how do you recognize the wise one? Do they have a special mark on their forehead? Or an aura at the back? How do you know them? That part actually not easy, I tell you. You have to cultivate. There is an English saying, you need to be something to know something. What is the saying already? You need a wise one to know another wise one, correct or not? True or not? If you are not at the level of understanding, how can you recognize that he is wise or he is intelligent? Let's say in the school, in your classroom, before the result come out, you don't know that everybody look like your classmate only. But then when the result come out, oh, that guy, first in the class, top boy or top girl. And then you remember him or her. Because there is something to differentiate them. But this is academic, intellect. Spiritual is different, understand? Spiritual understanding is different. Wisdom is not knowledge. Cleverness. When you are very smart, very clever, very intelligent, it doesn't mean you are wise. Great mind think alike. Yeah. Seldom differ. Neither does fool differ. Very good. Thank you, Leslie. So, all this, you have to really, really develop the understanding. It means you have to cultivate. As you cultivate, as you develop this understanding, because through your own transformation, you will come to know. Just like the Buddha, he explained. Because from the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, you will come to understand who are the wise ones. The wise ones are the one with the Dhamma. So you look at the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, the salutation that we chant. The Buddha has the 9 great virtue. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. So such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. Endowed with all those things. Teacher of men and God. So when you see this quality, you know it's a special being. But the normal enlightened one, you have to look at the salutation to the Dhamma. The salutation to the Dhamma make it very clear, the Buddha said. Swakato bhagavata dhammo. Well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And then the Buddha explained the characteristics of this Dhamma. The Buddha said this Dhamma is sanditiko, can be realized in the here and the now. If they promise you after death only you can become enlightened or go to the kingdom of God, and then you have to be careful. Understand? Because that is not sanditiko. That is not what the Buddha teach. Then the second thing is, after sanditiko is akaliko. Akaliko means what? This Dhamma is timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. So when that wise one share with you that Dhamma, it must have these characteristics of sanditiko followed by akaliko. Then everything that he shared with you, the third characteristic will show up is ehipasiko. Means what? It stands up to investigation, understand? Just like what I share, the way I explain to you, you can put it to test. All the Dhammapada words, all the Four Noble Truth, dependent origin, you can put it, you meditate, you can find out for yourself whether it really goes that way or not. Because it stands up to investigation. If you keep your precept, means you avoid all evil, the major evil you avoid. Then you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path Factor using right view to arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, followed by the four right effort. Means you cultivate wholesomeness, goodness of action, speech, and thought process. And the way you live your life is in accordance with this right understanding, right view. Then you follow the second advice of the Buddha to cultivate wholesomeness wherever there is condition. So keeping your precept comes from this advice of the Buddha. And the advice of the Buddha comes from the law of karma. Because the Buddha make it very clear. Each and every one of us, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if our karma plays such a great role in our life, what must we do? We must take care of what? Karma, isn't it? Then how do you take care of karma? The law of karma says you reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. If you plant the seed of evil, means with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then you will reap the fruit of evil. Karmically, you will fall. If you plant the seed of wholesomeness, goodness, kindness, generosity, love, compassion, and all those things, respect, contentment, then you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. So when you see all this and understand, then you will determine to follow the advice of the Buddha. Because the advice of the Buddha precisely take care of karma. He said to keep the precept is very important. If you want to avoid evil, you have to keep this precept. That's why we renew our precept. We chant. Panatipata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. And why is precept so important? Because those who violate this precept, they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Take for example, first precept. Who kill, who harm. That's why it's a training rule, the Buddha said. We undertake the training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. That's why all the precepts towards the end, Sikha Padani Samadhiyami, is repeated. But the front part is different. Panatipata Viramani Sikha Padani towards the end, you repeat. That one is we undertake the training rule to abstain from something. So that one is, in fact, when you take your precept, you are actually cultivating adhittana. Because you determine to undergo the training rule not to kill, not to cause harm to fellow living beings. That's why it's a training rule to train you to keep this precept so that you don't violate this precept, so that you don't commit evil. So it is out of love and compassion for you that the Buddha advised you to keep your precepts. It's not making life difficult for you. So always remember, keeping precept is out of compassion for humanity. If you don't keep your precept, karmically you will fall. You will suffer. You will reap the fruit of that evil action, evil speech, and evil thought process, and whatever karmic negativity that you arise through heedlessness. So this is how the teaching come about. To take care of karma, you have to keep your precept. You have to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, the first six path factor, so that you can develop right speech, right action, right thought, and right livelihood. Then right, for right effort to constantly purify your thought process, so that you can develop virtue, kindness, goodness, meritorious action. Then the last advice, to purify your mind, to develop wisdom, so that you can confront all the realities of life and existence, the first noble truth reality, the eight conditions. So that when you confront them as you go through life, you need not suffer, you need not be afflicted. So all this, you have to make affirmation, determination. When you understand that law of karma is so powerful, so important, that's why you need to make the affirmation that from now onward, I will ask for forgiveness for whatever wrong that I have done or karmic negativity that I have done from all beings, from the distant past until now. That's why there is such thing as repentance in the Mahayana teaching. That asking for forgiveness is also part of the Theravada teaching. That's why the Buddha teach under the chanting, Kayena Vacca Cittena, remember? Asking for forgiveness from the enlightened being, the Triple Gem, the monk. So all this, as you start to understand, you will start to make the affirmation, the Adhitana, to follow the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, to do good, and to purify the mind. Then the virya will arise, the spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate, to walk this way, because you understand the importance. That to avoid all evil, as recommended by the Buddha, you have to determine to keep this precept. To do it, you have to be ever mindful. And you have to understand what constitutes evil. The three evil roots. That's why the essential Dhamma need to be understood. So all this, they are related. Then, coming back to the cultivation, because we need, like Leslie said, great mind think alike. When you have this cultivation, when you have this understanding, then you will come to understand. Because as you start to cultivate your precepts, when you see people breaking their precepts, you know they are heedless. These are the beings who are foolish. They don't see the importance of this law of karma. They have not had this understanding to avoid all evil. They dare to allow their life to go down the drain through heedlessness. Then as you cultivate wholesomeness, then you understand what constitutes wholesomeness. Because you have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the way you carry yourself, you communicate with people through your speech. Then the way you act in life. And the way you arise your thought, they are all very wholesome, very beautiful. Then when you can see this in yourself, you can see the wise one, how they actually carry themselves, how they act, how they share the understanding with you, how you can observe them. They don't have the greed that usual living being has. They are not the heedless who are very selfish, who are very emotional, who are very violent, full of craving, full of desire, possessiveness, lust, and all those things. So you can see them. They are very gentle, very kind, very polite. And they have goodness. They have love. They have compassion. They have contentment. They have respect. They have a lot of gratitude. They always rejoice. Then they say, kanan, kanan, gratitude. There's a tsuji, a lot of this thing. And a lot of Buddhists, Amitabha, kanan, kanan. So these are the virtue, understand? But if you cultivate it like parroting, then it becomes habitual. Then it's not real from inside. But when you meet people who has the Dhamma, he will have all this. Then when they have developed the wisdom, they will not be afflicted. There is no fear. They are full of confidence in themselves. the Dhamma, the Buddha. Yeah. Their faith is very strong. Their spiritual faculties are very strong. Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. So this is how you observe them. But to understand and have the ability to observe, you yourself must have these spiritual faculties. Otherwise, it's not easy. That's why to actually have the ability to identify the wise and the enlightened one is very important. If you can have that, you become beautiful. That's why this nature, when it came, when it hears truth, it knows. Then this nature, after it connect and cultivate, it can feel. Then which are the cultivator, which are the wise one, which are the one that has the Dhamma, it understands, it can feel. Then it has joy. Then it pay respect. Then it send pure wish, blessing. Then it create Dhamma affinity. Yeah. Then all these are the various skillful means that you develop through your own cultivation to develop this understanding. So all these vow become meaningful. All this adhittana or affirmation, determination become beautiful. Then there's another part in the sutta where, or in the what they call paritta chanting, where you chant the Jaya Mangala Sutta. Towards the end, what do you chant? Etena Sacha Vajena Hotu Me Jaya Mangala. What does it mean? By the affirmation of this truth, the Buddha said, may joyous victory be ours. He always could that. And he invoked the power of Triple Gem, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And he always say, I take refuge with the Buddha. I take refuge with the Dhamma. I take refuge with the Sangha. And this is the only refuge, for there is no other refuge. Then he will use this word, Etena Vacha Sajena. Etena Sacha Vajena. Then Ho Tu Me Jaya Mangala. By the affirmation of this truth, which he just now recited regarding the Triple Gem, there's no other refuge apart from the Triple Gem. It's in the Dhammapada verse 2. I think verse 300 something, I forgot. There are three of these verses. May joyous victory be ours. Yeah. So this is how the Buddha used all this. The Angulimala Sutta also same. See, for pregnant woman. The Buddha teach Angulimala. Since the time he became a bhikkhu, he has not violated the precepts. He has not killed or harmed any living being. By the power of this truth, may the mother and the child have a safe birth. And it is so powerful, the complicated type of birth turned out to be normal. That's why the power of determination, the power of affirmation. But you can use power of merits, power of truth. The Buddha used a lot of power of truth. That's why you keep your precept very well. You can invoke that power of truth. It becomes very powerful. Ever since the day I understood the Dhamma, I have kept my precept very well. By the power of this truth, may what and what happen. And it will arise, I tell you. Yeah, this is the power of adhittana. That's why this line I came, I also taught many Kayanamitta, something which is not in your Theravada text. But some of the Mahayana teaching I believe they have, I'm not very sure is the whole thing or not. A lot of things that happen to you in life, especially those who go through suffering and misery, the Buddha always said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. So whatever situation you have, your problems, your suffering, your misery, or your affliction, you always remember there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, the Buddha has explained. So what is the cause? Yeah? What are the causes and conditions? The Buddha has explained. Every day, ask the monk to reflect on the five daily contemplations. The last one, what did he say? Loka. We are all born of karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of karma. So, it's definitely due to your karma, understand? That's why you must have done some of these things in one of the earlier lives, or many of the earlier lives. That's why now got condition, you become the victim. You kena kau kau, then you complain. Why these people are that one? Last time you did to people, you never complain. Then that time you in authority, someone say. You somehow say in such a very, very arrogant way. Tai Lei say, I got power, I got money. What can you do to me? So you cause suffering, you cause misery. Then in future, when got condition, you become the victim, people do it back to you, understand? Like you Tai Long, you lend people money, then you harass people, understand? You cause so much suffering and fear. Then in future, you come, you become victim to Tai Long. Maybe more fierce one. Then when you sell drug, push drug, and cause so much suffering, in future you come, you end up like drug addict. People push to you, sell to you. That's why you cannot blame. So what must you do? First thing first, admit and understand that this is due to your past evil action, law of karma. So what must you do? You need to ask for forgiveness. You ask for forgiveness. That's why you repent. Then you vow not to repeat all this, because these are evil things. Bring about karmic negativity. Bring about downfall. This is something that I shouldn't do. It's against the nature's law. Never know how to do. Then after that, you vow, you determine through this adhitana, never to repeat all this karmic negativity. We are following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Means you keep your precept from now onward. Then, cultivate wholesomeness. That's how you cultivate the Dhamma. Then purify your mind, meditate, develop wisdom. When you do this, what happens? You avoid all evil, means you avoid karmic negativity from now onward. Then you cultivate virtue, wholesomeness, merits, and wisdom. These are all your parami, understand? Your merits, your punya. Then the third important advice is, after you have done that, you can invoke power of these merits, understand? For causes and conditions, instead of just to avoid the foolish and meet out with the wise, so that enlightenment can be in the here and the now, that one you can do also. But more important is to resolve your problem immediately. So you aspire by the power of whatever wholesomeness or merits that you have cultivated and developed for causes and conditions for you to recover from whatever problem you have. Understand? Sometimes very traumatic situation. Like many of these instances where I taught them to help their loved one who is already not in the position to talk to them. Mentally, you cannot reach out to them already. Because they are in very severe depression. They have a lot of karmic obstruction, very strong. So on their behalf, you have to ask for forgiveness. Then vow not to repeat all this. Then do all the wholesomeness for them on their behalf. Make offering to Triple Gem on their behalf. Make offering to charitable organization that help and relieve suffering. Then later on, you yourself cultivate. Then invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for them to recover. And I tell you, they will recover. It's not magic. It's nature's law. It will take its effect. Then it will manifest. That's why this is how it can help you in your cultivation. Because when the physical form and mind recover, then you can have the causes and conditions to make use of this form and mind to develop the cultivation so that you can be a blessing to all. Then through this understanding, you can also invoke power of merits and wholesomeness for causes and conditions for you to walk the path of Dhamma along with sincere and real Kayanamitta, so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. Then you can also determine for causes and conditions to have affinity with all the great beings, the great bodhisattvas and all the Buddhas and all the enlightened ones. You not only can meet up with them, you will be able to recognize them. Then you seek their guidance, their protection, and their blessings. So all these are possible. That's how you can do a lot of things through power of merits, through affirmation by the power of truth and all these things. And all these are in the sutta, is taught. Then you can modify them when you understand. Then the most powerful one is when you know how to use this adhittana until you become very, very very strong in the understanding, then this determination becomes very, very different. It becomes very powerful. Then you make that type of resolve and determination and affirmation until it becomes very, very deeply rooted in your nature. Means you vow. Understand? That's what vow is all about. Vow means very serious affirmation, determination, or resolution. You determine to do this. That's how you vow. And the four basic vow of bodhisattva. Now I will come into the bodhisattva vow. Well, this is the most powerful of all the adhittana. You must have this understanding, otherwise you cannot walk this way. Well, it's too long, too far, and too arduous, and too difficult. But because of this vow, it will make the job very easy. It will actually help you. But you must have this understanding. So this is the bodhisattva vow that I developed on my own many years back. Then I started sharing it about 2 years ago. I think beginning of 2015. Then I repeated sometime in September this year, I think. Then this coming retreat in March, I will go through it one more round for those who want to develop the understanding and to repeat their vow. But this vow has to be taken with understanding. Then it will help you a lot. So I will read to you the general bodhisattva vow. The bodhisattva vow is a vow taken by Mahayana Buddhists to attain complete enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. One who has taken the vow is normally known as a bodhisattva. Bodhi is enlightenment, satta is being. So a bodhisattva is an enlightened being walking the path of Buddhahood. Whereas the Patimokkha vow cease at death, the bodhisattva vow extends into future life. There are basically two traditions of bodhisattva vow, one originating from the Asanga tradition and the other one from the Nagarjuna Longsu Pusa tradition. So a bodhisattva vow can also be found at the end of the Avatamsaka Sutta by Samantabhara, means Pusen Pusa. And he explained that the bodhisattva vow is taken with the following two famous verses from the sutta. They always repeat this for those who are going to take the vow. He said, just as all of the previous Sugata, which is the Buddha, they have generated the Bodhi mind of enlightenment. This Bodhi mind is very important. Bodhi mind of enlightenment. Bodhi Singha. You heard of it before, right? Putho Sam. Bodhi Singha. The Buddha generated the Bodhi mind of enlightenment and accomplished all the stages of bodhisattva training. So too were I. For the sake of all living beings, generate the Bodhi mind of enlightenment and accomplish and vow to accomplish all the stages of bodhisattva training. Then the promise to keep bodhisattva vow apply not only to this life but to each subsequent life until complete full enlightenment. Thus this vow will continue on their mindstream into future life. It will be deep within their nature. That's why it has to become a vow. Means very strong. You determine through sincerity, through understanding. And you really, really mean it. Yeah. Okay, then in taking this vow, you will join with hundreds of thousands of Buddhists in the West. See, Westerners also got a lot. And millions in Asia who had done so. As it is traditional, you might seek out a Buddhist center or a temple and take the Bodhisattva vow in the presence of a teacher. Or if you cannot do so, you can take them at home. Create a sacred space and place there the images of all the great beings, Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, who had gone forth before you. If you wish, you can invite friends or friends to be your witness. Sit quietly for a while, reflect on the beauty and value of a life dedicated for the benefit of all. When you are ready, add any meaningful ritual or chanting, like the lighting of candles, the taking of refuge. Then recite your vows. So all this, you can do it. Then he said, you can modify the language of this vow so that they speak your deepest dedication and devotion. Then you can repeat them every time when you sit in meditation to direct and dedicate your vow or practice. Then the following, which I'm going to read to you, is how do you take the Bodhisattva vow? So taking of the Bodhisattva vow, this is very important. Because this is for living being to develop that right view or right understanding life after life when they come. Whether they choose to come or they have to come. You know the difference, eh? Choose to come is, as a Bodhisattva, you can choose to come because you know how to come. But you have to come means law of karma take you along. You got no choice. You have to come. That's why you come. And there's a lot more other things that people cannot understand. Maybe another day, another topic. Because a lot of people has this wrong idea. They think if you take this vow, Bodhisattva vow, then it prevents you from becoming arahant. You heard of this before, right? That's why some people, they tell you, they have to ask you to renounce this vow, otherwise you cannot become arahant. Then a lot of people say, too long this way. I don't want to wait anymore. I renounce the vow. I want to become arahant this life. But they never inquire, who say all this? Who say all this? Too long. The thought, isn't it? And the thought is egoic, isn't it? And when the thought is egoic, that thought have craving to become arahant this life. How can you become arahant? Unless the understanding is not from the thought, then you don't have to renounce the vow. Actually, with the vow, you can only have that vow and go this way after you have gone beyond arahant. After you realize arahantship, you have to have the guidance and understanding of how to come back. Where you need a mind to come back. As an arahant, what happened? You no more ignorant, is it? True or not? Arahant no more ignorant, is it? Can agree to this or not? The 10 fetters no more, is it? So, no more rebirth, is it? Then how to come back? How to come back? You need this vow. You vow, the first one, the first basic vow, you vow to save the limitless living being. The countless living being, out of love and compassion, means you deeply determine and pull out this pure mind, which is only love and compassion, no evil root. That's why this mind, because you vow to come as a form of mind, to perform the work of a Bodhisattva, to cultivate your perfection and to liberate living beings, countlessly. That's why you can come back. That's why law of karma can condition a formal mind that has the pure mind, no delusion, no ignorance. That's why you can come back. It doesn't mean that you cannot become enlightened when you take this vow. There is no such thing. Those who walk the way, they will know. They can understand. But the problem is, most of people who write and comment didn't walk the way and believe that you cannot. That's why they tell you what to do. That's how they tell the unenlightened, tell the enlightened how the enlightened should live and behave. Exactly the same. Yeah. It's totally different from what people think. So this is the part that I need you to understand so that there is no confusion. Understand? Otherwise, your mind, very easy waver on. Because I heard from some who heard about all those things. Then they come and ask, but you, they told me, take the vow, block me from becoming arahant. No. Wow. So out of fear, they dare not even read the vow. No. Not to say take the vow. Until this extent, no, create so much fear. I say, what is going on? Why can't you just have an open mind and listen? Then do it and find out for yourself. All these things that I'm going to read to you after this, then you tell me whether it will cause you any harm or not. Like the Buddha told the Kalamas, isn't it? Whatever they ask you to do, you check. Is it harmful to me? Is it harmful to others? Understand? Don't be gullible out of greed. Oh, you, I cannot become arahant. So beautiful a thing, you just throw it aside. Now I read it to you, then you understand. So taking of a bodhisattva vow, one must make strong aspiration to take this bodhisattva vow with determined faith and understanding, sincerely in front of a Buddha or a great Mahabodhisattva who had gone forth before you. As is traditional, you may seek out a Buddhist center or temple or a shrine to take this bodhisattva vow in the presence of a teacher. Then making of special aspiration to walk the bodhisattva way. That's why you can invoke this. By the power of whatever merits, blessings and wholesomeness that this nature of mine had cultivated from the distant past until now, may it arise the causes and conditions for this nature of mind to have the following right Dhamma understanding, life after life, whenever it chooses to come or it has to come in the form of a form and mind. Form and mind means not necessarily a human being, understand not? You can be born into any of the 31 planes, the form and mind. First is to have right view with regards to the law of karma, karma niyama. Followed by right view regards to the law of dependent origination or paticca samuppada, which is part of citta niyama. And the fourth one is right view regards to the Four Noble Truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, dhamma niyama. You must have these three right view, samadhi. Then the second one is, the second dhamma understanding is, to understand the two aspects of the five aggregates of mind clearly via the direct seeing, to realize that they are all conditioned arising entity, causal phenomena, hence impermanent, leading to suffering, not me, non-self and empty. That is this so-called living being or five aggregate of form and mind. It is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world. To develop the cultivation and to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the right thought, right speech, right action, to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. To constantly recite with understanding the following Dhamma profoundly. Rupang anicchang. Rupang anatta, Vedana anicchang, Vedana anatta, Sanya anicchang, Sanya anatta, Sankara anicchang, Sankara anatta, Vijnanam anicchang, Vijnanam anatta, Sabbe sankara anicchang, Sabbe sankara dukkhang, and Sabbe dhamma anatta. So all this you have to recite with clarity and understanding, because these are very profound and important dhamma. So that life after life, you understand all this, then you can connect very fast to your nature, and your cultivation will progress very fast. Then the next one is the third right view. Having developed the above right view, this nature of mind vow to always keep the following three sets of pure precepts, following the advice of all Samasambuddha. So these are the three types of pure precepts that will help you to develop the four basic vow. So what are they? They are actually the advice of the Buddha in modified form. The first precept is to avoid all evil and to understand clearly what constitutes evil, bracket, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You have to expand on it. Then after that, to cultivate all virtues and blessings and wholesomeness, leading to the perfection of them all. Then the third one is slightly modified. To cultivate wisdom, to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. That's why it's not only avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. But this one, the third one, include the Bodhisattva basic vow. To cultivate wisdom, to help liberate and take across all sentient beings. Then only you proceed to take the actual Bodhisattva vow. Taking of the four basic Bodhisattva vow. Just as all previous Sugata or Buddha generated the Bodhi mind of enlightenment and accomplish all the stages of Bodhisattvahood training, so too will this nature of mind, for the sake of all living beings, generate the Bodhi mind of enlightenment and accomplish all of the stages of Bodhisattvahood training, so that the seed of Bodhi can be strongly planted within our nature. Then this nature of mind further vow with utmost sincerity, faith, and perseverance to walk to perfection this Bodhisattva way. We are taking the following four basic vows of a Bodhisattva. The first basic vow is this nature of mind vow to liberate the countless living beings from samsara and take them all across to the other shore. Then the second vow, basic vow, is this nature of mind vows to endure and severe oversection and suffering. The third basic vow is this nature of mind vows to cultivate and penetrate all dhammas to realize the perfection of all wisdom, prajna paramitas. Then the last one is this nature of mind vow to perfect the 10 perfection of paramitas to realize the unsurpassed Samasambuddhahood. So when you do all this, your 10 perfection cultivation will start. Because these are the four basic vows that will bring forth the 10 perfection. Like the first vow, when you vow to liberate the countless living beings, what do you cultivate? Love and compassion is there. So that you can go all out, sacrifice, and perfect those perfection. Then after that, the second one is to cultivate patience or endurance. Patient endurance. Means if you can endure and severe all suffering and vexation, means your perfection of patience, endurance is already there. Otherwise, you cannot endure. You cannot actually severe all those. And to do that, you also need to have wisdom. Then the third one is to cultivate and penetrate all Dhamma to realize the perfection of all wisdom. So the moment you cultivate this to perfection, means you have actually developed a clear understanding. You're not only enlightened, no. You have cultivated to perfection the paramita of enlightenment or prajna. Wisdom means perfection of wisdom. You have perfected it all. Means you understand very clearly the secret of life, the secret of living being, existential world, the nature's law that governs life and existence. All this you understand and how you function as a human being. That's why when you have this understanding, you can do your work very easily. You can take beings across, liberate them, teach them, guide them, train them. Then, of course, the last one is to perfect the rest of the parami, the perfection. Then I add in additional vow to break all karmic obstruction to bring about the way. Because, like it or not, all living beings don't try to be a hero and say you have never done any evil or you don't have severe karmic obstruction because you have been born and died for aeons and aeons and aeons. And don't tell me you have not been healers before. Even Sakyamuni Buddha, during his time as a bodhisattva, he also makes some minor mistake and error and karmic offense or negativity. That's why he need to go through his what they call friction. I read to you how to break your karmic obstruction. If by action, speech or thought, whether knowingly or unknowingly, via ignorant delusion or heedlessness, this nature of mind had offended or done anything wrong out to the triple gem, which is the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, this nature of mind would like to sincerely ask for forgiveness. And you have to do it sincerely. Then whomsoever from the distant past until now, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that this nature of mind had caused any karmic negativity, misery, suffering, or misled, this nature of mind would like to sincerely ask for forgiveness from them all. May my sincere request for forgiveness be accepted by all, so that all this karmic obstruction can be amicably dissolved and watered down or lessened, thereby enabling this nature of mind to continue with its cultivation to realize the true Dhamma with ease. Then after that, the third one, this nature of mind also vow to repent from now onward, vow never to repeat any of this karmic negativity born of greed, hatred and delusion by following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good and purify my mind. We are striving on with heedfulness to keep the five precepts and to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma diligently so that it will never violate the law of karma whenever it arises. That's why you have to make such affirmation and vow. Then by the power of whatever wholesomeness or merits that this nature of mind had cultivated since the distant past until now, may it arise the causes and conditions for this nature of mind to have the ability to overcome all other karmic obstruction or obstacle amicably, so that this nature of mind will be able to gain back its life, life after life, to walk the path of Dhamma, to fulfill and realize all its bodhisattva vows. Then there are some additional miscellaneous vows that you can develop to enhance the cultivation as you progress along the training. I have named some which are quite useful. This nature of mind vow to be successful in fulfilling all of its above vows soon as possible. This nature of mind vow to cultivate strong affinity with all Buddhas and Bodhisattva. This is a very important vow. And to request their nature's blessing, protection and guidance always. If you have this, you will have great affinity with all the Buddhas and Bodhisattva. Then this nature of mind vows to strengthen my five spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya until they become balas or power, life after life, so that all the above vows can be successfully fulfilled with ease. Then this nature of mind vows to cultivate extensively all virtue, blessings, and merits to help support my cultivation, so that they will shine forth to aid this nature of mind when the need arises in time of trial, difficulties, and tribulation while walking the Bodhisattva vow, the way, Bodhisattva way. So this is very important. If you don't have enough virtue, blessing, and merits, very difficult to walk this way. That's why you have to cultivate all this virtue extensively. Then, finally, as a note, the 10 perfections or paramita leading to Bodhisattva Sambuddhahood are: first is generosity, dana parami. Then you have sila, moral value, moral virtue. That's why when you determine to follow the advice of the Buddha, you will keep this and you will make sure you fulfill this morality, sila. Because this is the precept that you have to hold life after life until you realize full enlightenment. Then the third one is renunciation, nikama, renunciation. You learn how to develop renunciation of mind, kaya viveka, renunciation of the physical form. Then the final one is to develop wisdom to be free from all things, means you renounce the world, including your own self-delusion, so that you don't cling and don't hold to anything. The perfection of renunciation is very important. For Sakyamuni, the last test was what? He renounced his own wife and children, you remember? Under one of the Jataka stories, he was tested. Then the fourth one is wisdom. That's why we have the four basic vows, to cultivate all wisdom until perfection. Then spiritual zeal, virya, this one will keep on driving you, spiritual zeal or tenacity to walk this way. Then patient endurance, kanti. Then satya is truthfulness. Then adhitana is number 8, determination or resolution or aspiration and vows. Then loving kindness, metta, which is the first basic vow. Out of love and compassion for the beings, you vow to liberate them all. Then finally, the last one is equanimity, perfection of equanimity, which accumulate to perfection of wisdom. Without that, equanimity cannot be perfected. So this is what I would like to share with you on this topic. And I hope some of you can understand and benefit from it. Okay? So with this, I will end my today's sharing.
Any question from the floor?
Oh, very good. All understood. No question. It's either or, are there? Our brother there. You don't mind, use the mic so that it's recorded. Otherwise, we can hear you, but the recorder cannot receive. Yeah.
Yes. If a person behaves like robbing the poor, rich, and help the poor, you know, like Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Is he doing something healers or bad karma?
Oh, okay. You all heard the question, like Robin Hood, rob from the rich and give to the poor. So the question is, does he do good karma or bad karma? What do you think? Huh? Maybe you ask that question, we ask for your opinion first. What do you think? Oh, good. Not bad, huh? Means he has done both. Good and bad karma. Which is in a way correct. No? You rob means what? You cause fear, you cause suffering. You actually illegally take. Understand, no? But you take, like our, better not to quote. He didn't use the money for his own personal benefit. You understand? Then he donated it. So donation is a good deed, isn't it? That's why he has done a good deed. But the coming of robbing people, because you created that coming, that is the nature's law. Like a live wire. Huh? You know what? Live wire. The live wire never say, if I cultivate, I virtuous, I touch, it won't electrocute me. There's no such thing. This is nature's law. If you are not insulated, you touch. Whether you are heedless, wise, or enlightened, you touch, you're looking for trouble. It will electrocute you. So, what he did is an action. Even though with good intention, to rob the rich, wealthy, maybe to add in so that it's better, the rich and wealthy that has stolen from people, anasana, or cheat the rakyat and all those things. And then he go and rob, then he disappear. But like the live wire, anasana, robbing is causing harm. Taking things that don't belong to you, impart fear and all those things. So the karmic is there, anasana. But the severity of it is not so bad. Because this guy is not a cultivator, he's a crook, anasana. He also steal, he also cheat. So law of karma says if there is conditions, somebody will rob him and cheat him so that he will lose what he has. But let's say you rob the rich, and this rich, he never steal from people. He never rob from people. He inherited maybe from his rich papa. So how? Got karma, understand? So next time when you got future, in the future got condition, when you also inherit a lot of money from your sugar daddy or papa, then Robin Hood will come and rob you. So you reward your soul. This is cause and effect. I mean, this is just an analogy, but it can happen, understand? But because you help the poor, understand? You didn't use for personal benefit, okay? Then in future, when you are born poor, born very miserable, yeah, there will be Robin Hood who will do this and pass the wealth to you or money to you or whatever to distribute to you. So sometimes in life, you have to be wise, understand? But please, after I say this, don't go and quote me. Can you promise me that? Otherwise, I get into trouble. Yeah, a lot of people do that. You heard a lot of Buddhists, isn't it? You know what they like to do or not? They like to go and do good. So they go to old folks' home. Very common in there. Donate there. Help out there. You are doing good, no doubt. Generosity. Helping people. But that good, you cultivate that type of merit is for what? For condition, no, to arise in the future so that you can also land in the old folks' home and people will go and offer to you and so on. That's why you must have some form of wisdom. You don't be gullible. Oh, folks home. You planted that seed. Understand? That's why I say, don't quote me. Otherwise, these people who did that will be very, very unhappy, I tell you. But that is the nature's law. That's why you have to ask. But the goodness part you cannot deny. But don't get me wrong. Don't say, because of Brother Teo say, I don't want to end up like that, I don't want to help the old folk. Forget about it. Understand not? It got conditioned to help, just help. Understand not? But don't go and think of the merits. Understand not? Because these are wholesome things. When you do all this, you do with understanding, you don't have delusion, understand? Then it becomes wholesome. Then if you take care of karma, you won't end up in the old folks' home. You know why? Your children will not send you there. Because you have taken care of your parents before, understand? So you reap what you sow. But if you choose to send your parents or grandparents to old folks' home, then too bad. Then when there is condition in future, you have grandchildren and children who will send you to old folks' home. Then you got that type of parami, got people bring food for you. Understand? Come and massage for you, bathe for you. So in a way, not too bad. But sometimes you're not careful. You don't have this karmic negativity or what. But because you have done all this thing and you hope to reap the fruition of it, the effect of it, so that you say, just in case lah, if I go to old folks home, I also got it. Then you create the condition to go old folks home. Then you will end up in old folks home. Because you have that craving, that desire. Yeah, you want to buy insurance. You know what is insurance? Just in case. So a lot of people buy insurance, you know how? They go Christianity before they die to wash their sin. So at least one of them through eternal heaven, guaranteed. You are accepted Christ. Then they also become Buddhists. Go and bye-bye. Then the worst is, they go to other religion and also accept and buy insurance everywhere. This is not the way to cultivation. The reality is, there is only one set of nature's law that governs life and existence. If you don't meditate, you don't know who you are, what you are, then you have all this fear, all this wrong view. That's why you believe in all these rites and ritual. Then you're not sure you want to be safe, you buy insurance everywhere. But as a cultivator, when you meditate, actually you don't have to become enlightened to understand that. The form and mind, you can develop understanding. You can silence your mind and be very quiet. Then what is that nature? That nature never dies. It's energy. Consciousness never dies. Energy. How can you die? Who died? What died? Nothing died. Then who are you? What are you? You don't want to find out. That's why you think it's so mystical, so difficult to understand. That's why the Buddha say, hey, no you, hey, no me. The five aggregate of form and mind is empty, impermanent, leading to suffering. Not you. All this can be understood. You can investigate it through your own meditation, awareness, silence, heedfulness. Then you know how to die before you die. Then what is that? Separation of consciousness from the form. That's why my consciousness came out before. That's why I know what this thing is. I know how to die. And I know nothing die. No one die. And this random of consciousness can come out. But if you have realized the enlightenment, it will go into cessation. It will not come out. Understand? But it got no more ignorance, no more delusion. Then it ceases. Then when it ceases, it's like sanditiko, when you are here and now, you go through that process of cessation, you realize what they call the unconditioned enlightenment. But it's not you. Well, that form and mind that realizes it is connected to that wisdom. But through that form and mind, it understands. But that form and mind is impermanent. Condition arising, causal phenomenon, not a permanent and changing entity that you can call, this is me, this is I. That's why this form and mind, the Brother Teo you call, is not me. That's why you cannot have the delusion and say, this one is me, therefore I am enlightened. The enlightened one, you look at the Diamond Sutta, you will know. Even a Sotapan will never have that thought that he is enlightened, because that one is not him. That's why the teaching is very clear, and you can understand it very easily through your own cultivation. Understand? Huh? Can follow that? Wow, no response means what? Some answer yes. Very good. So, hopefully, it will give you some incentive to cultivate. Where all these are possible, can be understood, can be realized in the here and the now. No need to search too far. It's within you. Everything is within you. Search within and you will realize. Okay? I hope I answer your question.
More question? One more question?
Yeah, we can allow one more question. Brother T is very generous. Brother Wong.
Raju, what I asked just now, I said about we give with marks, without marks now. Okay? So there is no I, no you. Okay? The first mark is no I, no, then second mark, no you, then the third mark is no beings. Okay? So the fourth one, mark, can you tell the fourth one? I forgot already.
No Dhamma.
No Dhamma was, thank you. Thank you.
Because you read the Heart Sutta, you will know in true emptiness. There is no Four Noble Truths also. No one born, no one sick, no one old. That's why he know you, he know me. No Four Noble Truths means what? No suffering, no cause of suffering. No one to attain, no one to be enlightened. Then there is no even Noble Eightfold Path, the path that leads to the cessation and the enlightenment. Because this is within the context of true emptiness. What is true emptiness? It's the unconditioned. Unconditioned, no mind, no thought, no word, no concept, nothing. That's why there is no such thing. But within the conditioned world, there is Dhamma, anasana. There is a form of mind. That's why the Buddha said we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. Why did the Buddha say, we, you, I? And at the same time, he teach non-self. Empty, impermanent. Did he contradict himself? No. When he say law or karma, it refers to the form of mind, which is this human being. This human being is born of karma, heir to his karma, conditioned and supported by his karma. It is what it is because of it. That's why this form of mind, even though connected to the wisdom, you can say this one is enlightened, but it's not you. And because this is still subject to karma, that's why you cannot simply do things. Understand not? You cannot say, wow, enlightened, he know you, he know me, I didn't kill anybody. So you do what you like. Huh? You become Robin Hood and all those things. How can the law of karma still go? But the one connected with the wisdom, he cannot do. Understand not? But he's not deluded. But this form of mind will understand it has a duty towards the nature's law that governs life and existence. So this one, you have to realize the unconditioned, then you will understand what the Buddha meant by the four mark. The first mark is the mark of a self, a person inside, existing. Then mark of living beings. And living beings. Then all this will create a lot of delusion. That's why when you do things with a mark, the merit is limited. Understand? Because you always have this idea, I do. I do good. Understand? So the I is sakadity, self-delusion. So the evil root is there. So the action that you do is tinted with delusion, self-delusion. Understand? The evil root, one of the three evil roots. Then like the emperor, when he asked Bodhidharma, how much merit has I cultivated? Well, I built so much temple, provide for all the translation, the monks and all those things, their food, their monastery, and all the related Buddha images and all those things, and way place. Bodhidharma says zero. Why he says zero? Well, he's an enlightened being, understand? To him, merit is pure merits, understand? Pure merits means what? Whatever you do, without the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then only there is merit. But the emperor thing that he did, there is security, self-delusion. And out of greed, he do, where he wanted that merit, understand? So the two evil roots are there. That's why Bodhidharma says zero. Where he's an enlightened being. To him, you have not done any pure merits. Your merit is tinted with the self. A person doing the mark. Then this type of merit in the Diamond Sutta very clear. No matter how much of this merit you do, you cannot even compare to one living being who have understand, who have understood four stanzas of the Diamond Sutta and share it with the world. The merits that this being has, because those who have the Diamond Sutta wisdom and understanding, they got no mark on. They know. He know you, he know me. There is no mark of a self, no mark of a living being, no mark of Dhamma, no mark of life, nothing. And because of that, the merit is so powerful. It's way, way beyond. Just like in the Diamond Sutta, it's mentioned in many places. You can make offering of the seven treasure in this universe to all the great Maha, Bodhisattva and Buddhas of the three period of time. 3,000 million world system or what. The merits that you receive from all this offering is nowhere compared to that person who only understood the four stanza of the Diamond Sutta and share it with the world. You just imagine the merits that is without mark is so much more powerful and so different. And it's all recorded in nature's law. It's not somebody recording it. Understand? So the mark is actually very detrimental to the cultivator. That's why when you cultivate until there is no mark, that is the beginning of real bodhisattva-hood cultivation. Otherwise, you are still stuck within the mundane aspect of cultivation. Then to go beyond the mundane, which is the supramundane, you have to go through the stages of enlightenment. Initially, it's the sainthood way, sotapanship, then sakadagami, anagami, then arahan. Actually, arahan not bad already. But arahan, if you don't go the full bodhisattva way, is still, in a way, limited in its understanding. It can liberate its own mind. No more ignorance, no more rebirth. It can just go into cessation and parinibbana, no more. Maybe to give you an example, you understand. Like I used to share with some of the Tuesday class and Thursday class. Let's say our education system. Okay? You go kindergarten, then you go primary school, then you go secondary school. Then you go upper secondary, then you go form 6, then you go university. Yeah? You do your undergraduate and you become a graduate. Then you do a master, you do your PhD. Then you say, wow, takes so long. I want to come out and work first, get some money first. So I stop after standard 6. Then you come out. The one in standard 6 come out, compared to the one in university, same education or not? Same training or not? Completely different. Yeah. Even the one after Form 3 come out, what type of job are you going to get? Unless you are Lim Go Tong, then different. You are not Lim Go Tong. Your training, your standard is different. Understand? So, in a way, it's similar. Where you want to stop is not a decision by the thought. Understand? The thought is sakayadity, self-delusion. Thought is egoic. It's not you. But when you go beyond thought and develop the realization, then you realize there is no being cultivating. Understand? It's just form and mind, condition arising, consumer. And when you understand the secret of life, you know how to come. Then you know how to manifest and you know how to do all this work. Then there is no such thing as take very long. But this is all by the thought. Understand? That's why people who don't understand, they simply make comment. And it's very dangerous. It's just like Sunday 6. You go and comment and say, that guy from 5 a lot, talk cock on. He said, arithmetic, my teacher only teach me addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. He say got calculus, got differential equation, got this type of math, that type of math. He say this guy talk nonsense. Exactly the same. But you cannot understand the higher one, understand? Then the form 5 fellow, he thought he did pure math, he thought he understand it. You go to the university, those in the math class, science stream, mathematics, their math is even more wonderful, understand? You never heard of before. Even as engineer, we did 4-year series and all those things. Finite element, which you never heard of. And there is such high amounts, understand? That's why in cultivation also the same, the spiritual field also the same. If you are limited, you want to comment about those up there, you cannot, understand? That's why when you are not sure, have an open mind. Don't try to, because all this got coming. Repercussion, understand? When you have this wrong view and you say it and you condition other people to also believe, this becomes your coming obstruction. In future, when you come, you will meet up with people who will tell you the same thing and teach you the same thing like how you teach people. Then you get stuck there. Understand? That's why learning the wrong meditation also say, if you promote that type of meditation, you somehow donate generously to print those type of books and propagate all over. Then people get stuck. So, coming. You reap what you sow. It's like you push drug, you become victim. So, you promote this type of teaching, you come back, this type of teacher will get you a student. And you will go and learn that type of meditation. All this is what law of karma is all about. So, when you understand, you have to be very, very careful. Means, when you are not sure, don't commit. Don't comment. Have an open mind. Listen, you got nothing to lose, is it? Like the Buddha said, tell the Kalamas, check, does it harm me? Does it harm others? If it does not harm me and harm others, go ahead. Understand? Like this Bodhisattva vow I read to you just now. If you follow and cultivate, you got anything to lose or not? Do you have anything to lose? Does it harm you? Does it harm others? Then why are you full of fear? Just because somebody told you, it will block you from becoming arahant. And your craving to become arahant make you so fearful. You dare not even touch it or give it a try. Why? Because of your greed, understand? Of your fear, the thought tell you. That's why all these people cannot understand. But those who walk the way, like those in Form 5, they will tell the primary school people, no, God, this type of man is God. This guy, because only up to standard 6, he don't believe on us. Then the university people will tell the Form 5 people, oh, you think your ed maths, your pure maths is very difficult, lower 6 and all that. You go to uni, only you know. Then those who do PhD, master, they learn the higher version. So all this, you can see in your own civilization. That's why in the spiritual field, it's the same. Don't be so gullible. Don't be so narrow-minded. Don't be so conditioned by what the books say and what people tell you. Unless you meet the right one who understands, they will teach you how to have open mind. You got nothing to lose, is it? If you have not had that understanding, have an open mind. Don't comment, understand? Because all this has karmic implication. That's why having an open mind is very important. Otherwise, your cup is full, understand? Then you become rigid. Then nothing can go in. You only want to comment, understand? And say all those things which you yourself can never, never know or understand. But what happens if what you say is all wrong? Then, who suffer? Karmic will have its own way. That's why in this world, it's so difficult to encounter the right path, the right condition for the right Dhamma to manifest. Because living being through delusion, heedlessness, did a lot of things that obstruct them. That's why if you don't ask for forgiveness, you will be stuck. Many Kaya Mita also got stuck because of the wrong practice. For on the past. Nothing to do with now because the past is already gone. But if you understand that this way, when you come again, you encounter this way, after doing for so many years, you yourself can check. When you go back to life, in the midst of life, do you still have the evil result, greed, hatred, and delusion? Do you still have fear? Are you still heedless in the midst of life? Are the enlightenment factors there? Have you truly understood the Dhamma? Can you live like? Did you understand life? All these are very easy to check. And the moment you check, then you realize this one is not bringing you anywhere. Why not you give other thing that you heard a try? Then you investigate, like the Buddha said. If it's the truth, you will stand up to investigation. Then you will progress. And you will come to realize that the Dhamma is really different from what the world believes. Whatever that is logical need not be the truth. And most of the time is opposite of the truth. That's why don't be gullible. Understand? Okay, you better end. Otherwise too late. Huh?
Yeah. Sadhu. Sadhu, Brother Kyung, for your kindness to share with us your Dhamma knowledge. And I believe that we are better informed now regarding the working of this Bodhisattva path. So there is a need in each and every one of us to keep on clearing up whatever doubts that we may have. So when we have clearer understanding, then we know we'll be able to do the right thing. All right. So, as an appreciation, the token of appreciation to Brother Teo.
Sadhu. Where is Chua? Come. Chua. Sadhu. Yeah, come. Yeah, sadhu. You can keep this if you want to, huh? Don't worry. Yeah, he paid for dinner no, today, not chill. Leslie, you didn't share. Oh, he doesn't want to. He very generous, that's why I rejoice. sadhu. Yeah. That's why you have to talk to them first. Say, today I want to pay. Please allow me to pay. Then you say, we can share. Nona. Otherwise, one person is a bit heavy. We better learn to share. Everything we share out, so not so heavy. Then when we share, it benefits everyone. That should be the way. Okay, sadhu, thank you so much. See? Come, take, give back. So nothing get done, but a lot of wholesomeness get done. So come empty, go empty, but wholesomeness already all over. Because all this is what generosity is all about. When we have this generous heart, we appreciate, then we make offering. Then when those who receive, they will also appreciate, then they rejoice, then you receive merit. That's why you should sadhu. Then I offer to Brother Chua, you rejoice again. Again you make merit. No need money, but merit get done. Then Chua rejoice, get married, and donate on behalf of family member. Family member also get married as well. Then the money go back to Tiratana. So this is economic. Understand? Zero effort, maximum merits. The true spiritual economics. The Buddhist spiritual economy. So when you understand, the government can do the same. You know not? Award a contract. Don't have corruption or those things. Then through taxes, you collect back your money. Understand? Then the work get done. The money go back to the government. Your consumption tax. Now GST. I tell you, you pay income tax, you pay road tax, you pay fine, compound everything, then you pay GST. You know the government take back a lot more than what they fund on the infrastructure and the project. That's why the government is sincere, honest, is the same Buddhist way of economy. Send the money one round, finally go back to the government, nothing, no plus, no minus, but all the work get done. This is the same. That's why all the wholesomeness get done, but money go back and that's to the sister. So they are good government, very good government. Yeah, they don't take part of the thing. That's why the money remain intact, go back. If let's say pass to me, I greedy, I take some. Yeah? Then go to Brother Chua, he also take some. Then before he pass to me, Brother Te or Brother Gan take some. So, who lost? Tiratana lost. But although, give back, but what is left there is only maybe 10 ringgit or the 100 ringgit. But if everybody very sincere and just do what he's supposed to do, 100 come out, 100 return. This is how economic can actually become beautiful. Yeah. It is true incentive that drives the economy. So it's true love, true understanding that drives the spiritual cultivation that brings about all the wholesomeness. Okay, we better end.
So, Tiratana invites you all to come and be part of the government.
Sadhu. Okay, we better do the sharing of merits and transfer of merits. Let us recall to mind all the wholesomeness and the beautiful sharing. Then we will make this wholesomeness more beautiful by sharing with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhubata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu loka sasana itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yahwa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Let me end.